Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hill, this is our first time, at least for me, doing the Zoom here call on LA Talk Radio. It's a lot of fun. It's so funny. I'm used to doing my other show on Awake TV Network on Zoom, but it's an adjustment getting to all of this. So before I introduce you to today's guest and talk about our sponsors, I would be remiss not to talk about what's happening in the world today. You know, it almost felt trite going live on air today. I came off of our Coalition for Global Unity meditation that we do every Monday on Awake TV, and talking about what's happening in the world, where our consciousness is. You know, it was a very beautiful discussion that we had with Sister Jenna from AmericaMeditating.org on today's Coalition for Global Unity. And I think that we can all agree there's a bit of a heaviness in our hearts and our minds. I had one of my closest friends was not able to stay at her house the other night because buildings were burning down next to where she lived in Los Angeles. So as much as, you know, there are things happening in the world, we still have lives to live. And unfortunately, there are still millions and millions of Americans who are unemployed. And my intention out of today's show, more so than ever, is to give you something of value, to give you something that will empower you, uplift you, give you something that you can take away so that no matter what you're going through right now, whether you're employed, unemployed, whatever your political situation, however you feel about the state of the world is, that what Nikki and I share today is going to add value to your life in some way and to the consciousness of you tuning in now or in the future. So thank you for being here with us. Thank you for whatever you're going through and, you know, whatever it took for you to be here with us today. I really acknowledge you. And I don't know what's going on in your life. And all we can do is be here and be a support for you in the way that we can be a support for you. So our heart does go out to you and to whatever you and your family and your loved ones are going through right now. And know that today is for you. And this show and everything that we're going to talk about today is for you. And, you know, we wouldn't be able to do this without Markham Search. So huge thank you to Markham Search, who offers recruiting services. If, God forbid, you or a loved one has lost your job, if you're one of the 40 million plus Americans who has lost your job, please do keep Markham in mind. They have recruiting needs throughout the United States and they can help you. And, you know, we have an amazing guest today who is going to share with you some things that I think will be very valuable. And I think the topic that we were already planning to talk about today is going to be very much on point. So I'm going to share with you a little bit about who Nikki Evans is, and I'll have her share a little bit about her story. So Nikki Evans is the Chief Learning Officer of DNA Behavior International, and is also a certified professional coach with over 20 years of IT leadership experience. She is also the principal of Ridgeline Coaching, helping leaders and would-be leaders get to the bottom line, leveraging their careers for greatest impact. Nikki is also an active member of WICT Southeast and Women in Technology, and she is an ACC credential holder from the International Coaching Federation. So, Nikki, thank you so much for joining us here today. You know, it's a pleasure to be able to have these conversations and to be able to support one another during this time. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Yeah. And so tell our viewers and our listeners, I know some people might be tuning in later on iTunes, a little bit about your history, and then we can dive into the DNA of behavior, because I think that's something that is an interesting topic to delve into on any day, but especially during this time in COVID and what's happening in the world at large right now.
Sure. So I started out with a psychology degree and trying to figure out, well, what is that going to get me? And so I had friends that started a technology company that I really believed in. And fortunately for me, they got to a point where they could hire and believed in me and took a chance and taught me application development. And so I did that and then just kind of went on through the ranks of their organization, always trying new things and picking up something new. And then on to other organizations where I continued.
And started a technology company that I really believed in and fortunately for me, got to a point where they could hire and believed in me and took a chance and taught me application development. And so I did that and then just kind of went on through the ranks of their organization, always trying new things and picking up something new. And then on.
Got it. Oh my gosh, that was so funny. I think that there was a bit of a delay there in the midst of trying to do this. I was working on, I was like, oh, okay, I'll share the show while you do this. But there's obviously a little bit of a delay in working out how this system works. So you were saying you had friends who had this IT company and they were able to hire people. And can you trace back as I'm working through the kinks myself with all this as it being our first
year? Yeah, sure. No problem. So, you know, I took on several roles. It was always a, oh, let me try that. And until I got to my last leadership role in technology and said, okay, I'll try that. I'll take my team and we'll try that. And I was doing application development, which is a very, allows for a lot of creativity, allows for some spontaneity, allows for kind of solving problems. And my new role and my new leaders really wanted us to be an operations group, a development operations group. Mm-hmm. They really understood the operations side of things and they really, really wanted me to be good at operations. And I wasn't. And it was so hard to not be good at a job. I was always good at my job. I was always very good at my job. And I couldn't figure out what was happening. It was so stressful. And I was trying so hard to protect my team from the stress that I was feeling. And I was trying so hard to please a leadership team that I couldn't understand what was happening. And eventually I got let go because it was less than a year. So for me, it was head spinningly fast because I had worked in this organization for 13 years prior to that with all stellar performance reviews. And then suddenly I was not performing. I was completely failing to meet expectations from my leadership team. And I couldn't figure out what was happening. And it was so hard. Mm-hmm. And after I left, I met up with the DNA behavior team and I took my discovery and I'd taken other discoveries before, but I took it and I looked and spontaneous and creative are two of my top talents. And no wonder operations was a bad role for me. Like no wonder I was terrible at that. And if I would have had that report, like if I would have been able to say to my boss, look, it is not for lack of trying. I don't disrespect you. I don't even think this isn't what the team means. Like I can believe in all of the vision that you have. I'm not the girl that's going to be able to carry out this vision. Where my strength and my gifts lie are not what you need in an operations role. I cannot be as detail oriented as you need me to be. I cannot be as repetitive with process as you need me to be because I'm not wired to do that work. Mm-hmm. But I didn't have that. And so I failed my team and failed to protect them from kind of what was happening. And I failed myself and I failed my lead. You know, like I just felt completely shattered when I got let go because I had always been good at what I did. And now suddenly I wasn't good at it. And so having some language to talk about why wasn't I good at it? What was happening? And why every other time when I raised my hand, it worked out okay. And this last time I raised my hand, it totally worked out badly for me and for the organization. It cost them money. It cost them time. And so I really developed a passion for how can I help other people figure this out before it gets to the point that it got for me where it was kind of a disaster. And as I met up with and started working with the team at DNA Behavior, I just was enamored with what they did. And with the way the language worked, that it was an easier language for me to access than maybe some of the other discoveries that I had taken. And so now I find myself, you know, I went to talk to them about an idea, creative, spontaneous idea that I had for how could I help them with doing some stuff. And it turned out I was on a job interview and it turned out that I got a really great opportunity out of the conversation. But, it breaks my heart that people don't know the words to talk about their strength or don't have a way to look at their situation that it wasn't about me being a bad employee. It wasn't about me not being motivated.
it wasn't even about me not being good at what I did. It's that I chose to do something that I was never going to be good at. And so understanding that and understanding like how that happened as a pattern in my career. And even in the past when I had, you know, I was a project manager, spontaneous and creative are terrible top traits to be a project manager. They just are. But I struggled through it and I was able to do it. And I did it well enough that I eventually was promoted to manage project managers. And then that's it. Now I'm just doing exceptions and now I'm just finding creative solutions to things. This is where I'm supposed to be. And so as I, you know, was able to go on in leadership, some of those talents were able to be used until, you know, until I got to that roadblock. So that's really why I love doing the job that I do now, help training other professionals to do what I do and helping coach people to understand what your strengths are and how do you find work that fits with those strengths rather than fights with those strengths.
Wow, I love this. It's so important. And I know for a lot of our viewers out there, they might be familiar with these sort of psychometric tests or they might not. I know you can tell if it's lineage of that.
It is. So our founder, Hugh Massey, was a financial advisor in Australia. He calls himself a reformed accountant. And he, as he was advising people, he would realize that they would have a great plan on paper and everybody would agree and smile in his office about how they were going to do things. And then a life event would happen or some kind of stressor or a market event would happen and the plan got thrown out the window. And he was really troubled by this. Why is this not working? Why are people not following a plan? And he kept coming back to this is human behavior. This is human behavior. I need to figure it out. And he decided that as he was thinking about this, it really became more of his passion to figure that out, figure out the human behavior piece of it than to continue to do financial advising. And so he set out on a quest. He met up with Lee Ellis, who became his mentor and co-author in the book. And they set out to work with a group of psychologists. They have scientifically validated now their discovery and the findings from it. The way they set the discovery up is what we call a forced choice assessment. So rather than ranking yourself 1 to 5, how do you feel about these things? You have to pick from 3 statements, which is most like you and which is least like you, which forces you to rank those. And we found that it's super reliable. It's scientifically validated. And so it is along the lines of some other assessments. The thing that I like about this one is that I think the language is really accessible. The mm-hmm. language that you get to talk about your strengths and maybe areas of opportunity for you, it's easy. It's take charge or cooperative. It's outgoing or reserved. They're words that people understand. So it's not an acronym that you have to try to memorize or a series of numbers or a color code. It's really pretty easy language to start, you know, like I said, my top 2 traits are creative and spontaneous. It's pretty easy for people to get an idea about who I am if I tell you that my top 2 traits are spontaneous and creative.
Yeah, I love that because I do feel like some of the other ones, I remember I learned 1 year ago, diamond, emerald, ruby, sapphire, pearl, you know, there are all these things and you start to ask yourself, wait, what am I again? So let's dive into some of these because I feel like even speaking about it, this is one of the biggest things that I think helps us as human beings is to understand each other. I think part of the reason we see division in the workplace, in families, in the world, the greater world at large right now, is because of a you versus me. Like if I don't realize that you're spontaneous and creative and I'm grounded and need structure, then I might make you wrong and say, oh, Nikki, you're bad or wrong because you are different than me. So that's scary. Therefore, I'm going to resist you, judge you, make you wrong, or distance myself. And I think it's really important that we understand about ourselves. I think the more that we can shine the flashlight internally, the more that we'll be able to externally relate to other people and have greater consciousness and awareness for one another.
Absolutely. I totally agree. And I really do think it starts with know yourself, know what your strengths are, know kind of how you're wired to think about things. And I can go through our 8 factors.
I'm so curious. I want to know. I don't know about any of our viewers or listeners out there, but I'm curious. My interest is piqued and I want to know what the factors are.
Sure. So
We'll start with the command factor, which is take charge or cooperative. And so you rank somewhere on that scale of tending to be more take charge, tending to want to set the agenda, want to make a decision, fairly self-reliant, pretty direct about the way you say things, down to more cooperative, where you're more group-oriented and you're more consensus-seeking and you're more diplomatic about the way you say things and you're looking for more harmony amongst people. And so when you get those two dynamics together, if they can understand and work well together, that's an awesome dynamic because you got people that are willing to make a decision and move forward and do something. And you've got people who are looking out for, well, how is this affecting the group? And did everybody's voice get heard? And are we making sure that we're really considering all sides of things, right? And in our scoring, we do a score sort of from 20 to 80. And so the closer you are to 80, the stronger that trait is, or the closer to 20 you are. So if you're looking and cooperative is on this side, then you're going to go from, you know, 49 to 20 and from 51 to 80. And so the stronger that trait is, the harder it is to actually change that behavior. And so that's the other interesting thing, I think. It's not just your take charge or your cooperative. It's you're either very take charge, or you're a little take charge, kind of in the middle. And so all of us have the capacity to flex and move that behavior. So I don't have to be take charge all the time. Naturally, I will tend to be more take charge than cooperative. But I can choose my environment. Should I be more cooperative in this environment? Do I need to defer to somebody who's even more take charge? Do I need to be the one that steps up and make the decision because I'm in a group of people that would prefer to defer and that don't like to make a decision and that's pretty uncomfortable for? So I can choose. And when I know how strong that is, I'll know how hard it is for me to choose that. Mm-hmm. Under stress, it's going to be much harder for me to choose to be different than my natural hardwiring. And depending on how strong it is, like my spontaneous factor is very, very strong. So for me to be detail oriented and planned takes a ton of energy from me. But for me to be more cooperative is a little less energy. It's still energy for me, but you know, I have to make a conscious effort to do it. And so you can do that, but once you understand that, and once you can start to think about how do I want to flex that style? What would serve me about being more cooperative in this moment? What might serve me about not being the first person to speak in this meeting? Maybe I can wait. Because those take charge people typically will also be fairly fast paced and want to jump in and speak up and have their voice heard and make their decision.
Totally see that. I can see myself on the spectrum and I can see what you're saying too of how hard it is to shift and how important it is to know these factors about yourself and business.
So the second factor is the people factor, and that's, are you more outgoing or more reserved? So people that are outgoing will tend to be more communicative, will tend to be more social, will tend to be the ones that kind of get, it's sort of analogous to extroverted, introverted. They'll tend to be the ones that enjoy being out and being with people. So those are the people that are struggling a little bit right now and that are trying to get their virtual happy hours on because they don't have enough interaction with people during the day. And then those that are more reserved will tend to be more quiet. They will tend to be more thoughtful before they speak up. They will tend to enjoy more time on their own. They'll tend to be more comfortable working independently. Maybe happier working alone at home without all of the interruption. And so again, this is a spectrum. And, you know, for people that are high on outgoing, especially under stress, it can be really hard for them to be alone. It can be really hard for them not to have somebody to bounce ideas off of, not to be able to verbalize what's happening with them and process it out loud with somebody. Where people that are high outgoing are working with people that are high reserved and there's a stressful environment, you see this crazy pattern of that person high outgoing is going to want that connection, right? Mm-hmm. And so if I have a problem with you, we need to talk it out. We need to figure it out. We need to do that right now. Come sit and talk to me and let's figure it out, right? That person high reserved is like, I can't process this till I've had some time alone, right? So I'm going to back up a little bit and try to get my reserved refresh energy. And you see them kind of chasing each other. Like, how far do I have to back away for you to stop charging at me? The more that extrovert doesn't get met with some kind of connection, the harder they're going to try for that connection. And so when you start to understand that and say, look, I can't process this out loud with you right now.
you know, and if you think about this as a leader, if you treated everybody the same way and you said, you know what, we're all just going to go sit in our offices and take a little time and then we'll reconvene on this later. For your reserve folks, that's going to feel awesome because that's exactly what they need.
Yeah.
For your outgoing folks, they're going to feel like they're being doubly punished because we have this problem and we totally need to talk about it. No one's got it. And now you're going to make me sit by myself and think about it. That's even worse. I need to be able to talk about it. So that's kind of the two ends of the spectrum there. And again, you can choose, and under stress, it'll be much harder for you to flex those. The stronger the trait is, the harder it is to flex when you're under stress. It's something to think about to choose. And then next is our patient versus fast paced. So people that are high patient will tend to be more careful about their thoughts, will tend to think things through a little bit more. They'll also tend to be more empathetic with others. They will tend to be more understanding. They will tend to be the people whose desk you go and hang out at when you need to feel heard and understood. Your patient team members are the ones that will sit and listen to you and really empathize and are good at listening. And we'll look at the kind of people side of things, how people are feeling, and really be mindful and thinking of that. Where your high, fast-paced team members will talk at a faster pace, will think at a faster pace, will be willing to speak up much more quickly. They're not as afraid of being wrong because they'll be able to think out loud. People that are high patient want to be right, so they want to be thoughtful about what they say. They don't want to misspeak. They want to make sure that they've thought through what they've said. People high, fast-paced are also very rational, very logical, very task-focused. And so you can start to see if you get somebody really high to take charge and really fast paced, they're all about the bottom line. Let's make a decision and move on. Let's go, let's go, let's go. Now, if they're working with people that are high cooperative and high patient, it feels a little like bullying, right? Like, why do we have to make a decision right this second? Mm-hmm. Have some time to think about it. What are the people implications of that going to be? Have you thought through how people are going to feel about this new thing that you want us all to do? And I think as leaders, remembering that you might be on the top end of the change curve and your team you've already had some to process it before you've talked to your team about it. Your team is just now hearing about it for the first time. And some of them may be able to get on board really quickly, and some of them are going to need to hear it again, and they're going to need to process it a little bit, and they're going to need to think about how they feel about it, and they're going to need to figure out where to put this new thing, right? And so we tend to think that other people think like we do. And so trying to remember, not everybody's going to be as fast-paced. Not everybody's going to be as focused on the people. But when those two, the fast-paced and the more patient, can work together, that's when really great things can happen. Because although one feels like, oh, this is going so slow, I can't believe we're waiting for a decision on this, the other is really thinking through the people implications of the decision that you're making or the change that you're trying to make, and will make sure that people feel heard and understood. And I think that's so important, especially now when you don't have face-to-face, if any, real, true face-to-face communication with one another, to really understand that is important. Next is spontaneous versus planned. So people high planned tend to like accuracy and detail and precision. They will be precise about the way they speak. They will be precise about the way they think. They will be very detail oriented. Those are the people that if you're very high planned, when things go awry, you pick up the plan and you follow it to the letter, because that's why we have a plan, kids, because we're following the plan. Your high spontaneous team members, though, very instinctual, very high level, very more of a generalist, more kind of go with their gut. If things start going awry, they're going to drop the plan because clearly the plan's not working because things have gone awry. So I'm going to drop the plan and figure things out. And it's not because they were passively aggressively agreeing to the plan when you set the plan out. I will agree wholeheartedly with the plan when we set it out.
Until it's 1 second past the plan, then it's like that plan is now dead and we're now moving to Z, D, E, F, G.
Right. I got to figure something else out here because that didn't work. And so I have to reach out to my more planned team members and say, you need to call me on that. If it's really important that we follow the plan still, recognize that this is my stress behavior, and it's going to be even harder for me to pick up a plan and be detailed about it under stress. So I'm going to need to partner with you. It's not because I disrespect your plan. It's not because I didn't agree that this was the way we should do it. It's because my natural behavior is drop the plan and figure out a creative way to get past this. And so I need you to help rein me in about where is that helpful and where is it not? If we really are stuck and the plan really isn't working, then you're going to want someone like me on your team to say, well, what if we did this? Or what if we did this? Or how about if we try this? Because you can't see past the plan. But if we really do need to stick to the plan, then I'm going to need somebody like you to, you know, bring me along and say, Nikki, seriously, we still have to do all of these things. Like, there's a legal requirement for us to do these things. You know, there are things that have to get done, and they have to get done this way, or else you're just going to cause a mess. And so one of the things that I've found that's really helpful to me, because one thing that happens with high spontaneous people, we tend to think out loud a lot. And so when I'm forming a plan, it'll be out loud. And I had this experience with our operations manager, who is very high plan. We're opposite on our top trait. And what I realized is people that are really highly planned, if you start saying something that sounds like a plan in their head or on paper, they are writing that plan down. Like, they are on it. And they, as soon as you say something that requires them to do something, they're already on it. Like, okay, I'm going to have to do this. I'm going to have to do this. They now may not be hearing anything else that I've said, because what they caught on to was, oh, this is a task that I'm going to have to do. So let me start planning that task. Meanwhile, in spontaneous land over here, I have said that first thing. And then when I heard myself say that first thing, I was like, is that really the way we want to do it? Maybe we should do this. Maybe we should do. Now I've got three other ideas, and I'm on idea three as I'm wrapping up. My planned operations manager has already made a whole operations plan around idea one. And we come back together a week later, and she's got this great plan for an idea that I have dropped last week, thought that we agreed to drop in the meeting last week. And so what I've realized is summarizing, hey, here's where I think we landed, or please don't, you know, I have another spontaneous client who says, pens down. We're not writing it down right now. I'm still like ideating. Like, this isn't the time to write this down. Okay, you can pick your pen up now. Now it's a plan. Now we can start writing a plan. But summarizing, what did you take from this? Where did you think we landed is a really great tool for, especially for people that are high spontaneous, to check in with their planned counterparts. Did we hear the same thing? Are we on the same page? Are we going to move forward?
I love what you're saying, Nikki. And I think this is a good point to kind of, I want to pause here, because I think we should give them a teaser and allow people to dig more deeply into this. What I'm hearing you share out of all of this is that there are different spectrums of how we occur as human beings, not good and not bad. But I love what you've shared, because it really gives us a lot of insight into who we are. Is if we are somebody who is very extroverted and we're being confined to a space and not given that outlet, then we should have, or not should, we could have compassion for ourselves. And, you know, for the people who are in similar positions to us, because when we're stressed, we're going to exhibit more of that and have less malleability and movability. So what I'm hearing is, on one side, step one is awareness, is to understand the DNA of behavior, step one. And then step two, what I really got out of what you shared is communication, is communicating back to somebody, hey, what I heard is, or what I need, I think one of the reasons we see passive aggressive behavior in the workplace and in relationships is that it doesn't feel safe to express a need, nor half the time do we even know that we need that. A planner might somewhere in the back of their head have this sense that, oh, I need a plan to feel safe, but it would never occur out here, nor would it feel okay to share that in a loving relationship, a friendship, a business relationship. So it feels wrong. And so then you find passive aggressive behavior might emerge because of the lack of comfortability with expressing needs, wants, and desires. And I love this, because you're talking about technology and tools to verbalize and notice what the awareness is of the thing, and to have self-awareness, and then to communicate what you need to your colleagues, to the people you're supervising, and to people in any personal or professional relationship. I think it just strengthens our ability to be better human beings.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it was my lack of language to be able to say, I can't do the level of planning that you need me to do in an operations role, that caused, you know, this cascading effect of melting down, right? And had I had this language and been able to say, look, I'm not wired that, like, I want to meet you, but this job is going to require a maximum flex for me every single day.
And what I found is that when I was able to take all of that energy and do the flex and do something that was really planned, my boss would be great. And then he'd raise the bar. And I'd be like, you have no idea how hard it was for me to do that big of a flex to get you that one thing. And because we didn't have this conversation, because I didn't have this language to talk to him about it, it just felt to him like insubordination or like I was deliberately trying not to be good. Because all of my other reviews were good. All of my other bosses I did good work for. Why wasn't I doing good work for him? We are wired to tell stories. And we typically don't tell generous stories about one another. And it is a biological like need to make sense of things, right? But it's really easy to tell the story, Nikki wants me to fail because she's not giving me the detail that I need. I've asked her for a plan and she's given me an outline. Why will she refuse to give me her plan?
Oh, wow.
What I gave you was what I need as far as a plan goes. What I gave you that looks like an outline to you, I'm high-fiving myself because I wrote something down on paper and it's in front of you now. Like, hooray, you must be thrilled because I gave you a plan. Meanwhile, my high planner is looking at that going, I don't know why she wants me to fail. She keeps giving me an outline. She will refuse to give me a detailed plan. I don't understand what's wrong with her. If we don't have this conversation for me to say like what I gave you in my little world is a detailed plan, but you need to ask me because I'm never going to spontaneously deliver all the detail that you want. It's not in me to think that way. So I might have a task that says, set up the room. And to me, that means there should be chairs and some paper and a pen, right? And I know all of those things in my head. So it doesn't occur to me that those things need to be written down. But to my high plan folks, they're like, how many chairs? What configuration should they be in? Where should the paper be? How should the pen be set up? What color pen should it be? What should it be, a notebook or a portfolio? Do we need the handouts? All of that detail, it won't occur to me to ever write that much detail down. But if you ask me, I can tell you, well, here are the things that I care about and the rest of it, you can decide. And so it's having that language and being able to say, just ask if you need more detail. It's not because I'm trying to thwart your need for detail. It's because I can't, my brain doesn't work the way yours does. I super appreciate that yours works that way because things wouldn't get done. Parties wouldn't happen. If I was left to do all of the event planning in the world, boy, would we have disappointing events.
I know. I just saw every fight I've ever had with anybody in my life just flash before my eyes. And I was like, oh gosh, the times where I could have communicated, I'm not designed for that. And like, we're all designed differently and having compassion for one another's design. Somebody who's introverted does need more space. And I loved what you shared about that. It's almost like one is chasing the other. But I found if you do the thing that's hardest for you in those moments where you're really stressed and say you're normally extroverted, to actually go within and take that time to pause. Or if you're introverted, to actually engage with somebody when it's hardest for you, on the other side of that is where the miracle happens. And I think that's what's really beautiful is if we can go against our nature, especially in those moments when we're stressed, look at the world, look at COVID and what's happening right now, is to do the thing that's hardest for us. It might be loving another person or accepting your boss or the person who drives you crazy and is like nails on a chalkboard for you in your office. Out of that, we can transform the consciousness of humanity by shifting and doing the things that are hardest for us.
Yes. Yes. And this gives you a framework for how would I do that shift? When you think about the people that exhaust you the most, you know those people, right? You know when you are going to have a meeting with somebody and you have to gear yourself up because you just know they're exhausting. It's really likely that some of your top behavioral traits are the exact opposite of that person's. And so you're always struggling in that, how do we, and typically we pull more toward my style and he pulls more toward his style. And if we can do what you just said so beautifully, if you can flex where it's hard for you and meet that other person, you're right. It only requires one person to change. And then suddenly,
you've closed the gap. It's like, even if somebody else is still over here and somebody else is still at their highest stress and they're not going to change a thing, maybe they don't have the capacity to, maybe they aren't familiar with tools. But if you close the gap a little bit, what just happened? Despite the fact that the other person is over here, the gap still just got closed.
Yeah. And it's amazing. So I'll keep going through our
Well, Nikki, so here's the thing. We have a limited amount of time for this, and I want to leave it as more of like a teaser for people. So that way they feel inspired to check out the book and everything that you're doing. So what I would love is if you could share, and I also just found out for some of the people in LA, including the people in the studio. So hats off to Sam and Ronan and all of our team members. Our studio is actually in Los Angeles, and I found out that there's been a new lockdown and curfew imposed. So I also want to be considerate to the people who are at the station putting on today's show. Sometimes we have a little bit of leeway to go over and totally engage in these conversations, but sometimes when circumstances in the world extend themselves, you know, we want to be respectful to everybody involved.
Absolutely.
So do tell our viewers and our listeners, please, where can they find out information about all this juicy stuff and find out the last ones? I think it's more fun if we don't tell everybody everyone, so that way it leaves them kind of curious and piquing their interest for more.
Absolutely. And on the note of teaser, I will say that the very next one, when my husband took this, I understood so much more about our relationship and what was happening. Totally unlocked a key for me.
Good teaser. I hope it's in the book.
So a couple ways you can find us. DNABehavior.com. You can go there. You can find out tons of information about our tools, and you can even take a free trial. And you can also find all the information that I talked about and more stories from both Hugh Massey and Lee Ellis in their book, Leadership Behavior DNA. And that's available on Amazon and in bookstores. And visit us at dnabehavior.com and find out more.
I love it. Well, I know I'm going to go online. So you said we can go to dnabehavior.com and do the free trial and get tested and find out. Because I find these things, particularly in business or personal relationships, hey, wouldn't it be nice if we could all have less stress, less chaos, less drama in our lives? I know for me, that would be a win.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And in addition to, so there's a free trial so you can get a report. And then we also have a coaching center. So if you're interested in really diving deeper and working with somebody to really uncover some of the deeper reports, we have that available well, so you can meet with me or one of our other coaches and explore a little further. We also do work with teams. So if you're interested in having your whole team go through this, we can do team facilitations where we can walk your whole team through this. And we've seen some miraculous turnarounds on teams when people really start to understand each other and tell more generous stories.
Yeah, I think that's so beautiful. I think that's the crux of what's happening in the world is how can we understand each other better? I think that's what causes lack of unity is lack of understanding, lack of language, and lack of communication for what we need. I think that I was talking earlier today on the Coalition for Global Unity show, you know, when we feel angry or when we feel sad and we don't express it, it kind of gets like compacted into this pressure cooker until one day it does explode. And so one of the greatest gifts we can do is to understand what we're feeling and to acknowledge it and say, I feel angry, I choose to feel angry, and not allow the emotion to own you, to own that emotion and own what you are. Own if you're an extrovert, own it if you're patient or impatient, to know that is power. And Nikki, it's been so wonderful to have you here today with us. Nikki Evans here from DNA Behavior. So thank you so much for joining us here today. And thank you to LA Talk Radio for having us. I do invite everybody. It was a very powerful meditation today with Sister Jenna. So if you're curious and you want to explore meditation, you can go to awaketvnetwork.live. And at the top of the screen, it's free to check out all of the prior meditations on the Coalition for Global Unity link at the top, including today's meditation with Sister Jenna. And we also do a show there at 7 a.m. on Thursdays called Conversations for Consciousness. That's what, you know, this show is focused on. How do we find our purpose? How do we live our dream? How do we have the job, the promotion, everything we want? And everything exists in a conversation, and it begins with our consciousness. So I'm so grateful that you took the time to tune in today to get yourself the job and that you were able to join us here. If you missed any portion of today's show, it'll now be on the Facebook page of LA Talk Radio. And you can also find it under iTunes later in the week under Get Yourself the Job. And thank you for bearing with me as I was working through our first time hosting here, at least for me, as a Zoom simultaneously in podcast on the network. So I appreciate your patience in the beginning of the show. and wherever and whatever you're going through, just sending a lot of love to everybody out there. So thank you for joining us today, Nikki, and thank you to everybody who tuned in.
Thank you.
You're listening to Get Yourself the Job with Jennifer Hill, only on LA Talk Radio.